This conference is being recorded.
Hey everybody, this is Mike Westerdahl here from LeanHybridMuscle.com, and I've got Eric Talmont on the phone right now. He's a top lightweight powerlifter, and he has a passion for all things nutrition. He's a 96 graduate of the University of Evansville. He's also a certified metabolic typing advisor and a functional diagnostic nutritionist. So let me just give you a little background story of why I set up this call with Eric. I think it was about 2 months ago I called up Eric, and the reason I called him was because I know that he's into being strong as a powerlifter, and he also has this nutrition background. So the one question I had for him was, Eric, is it possible to actually build muscle and burn fat at the same time? Because all my friends, and I'm friends with a lot of, you know, strength coaches and personal trainers and nutritionists, when you talk to these people, you talk to these experts, and not to put down my friends, but it just didn't make sense to me. I said, can I gain weight and lose fat at the same time? And they're telling me, no, Mike, this is impossible. You cannot do it. They said, if you want to gain weight, you have to have a calorie surplus to put on muscle. And if you want to burn fat, you have to have a calorie deficit to burn fat. And I'm like, this just does not make sense to me. Because when I was in college, I know that I was gaining weight and getting leaner. So I thought of Eric. I called him up, and I'm like, Eric, what do you think? And that's why we set this call up, because he told me about something that's called the anabolic environment. So that's one of the things we're going to talk about today on this call, which I thought everybody would be really interested in. So welcome to the call, Eric. Thanks a lot for being here.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
Could we just start things off rolling? What exactly do you mean by anabolic environment? What does that word mean?
Well, in very basic terms, anabolism is the building up of something, and catabolic or catabolism would be the tearing down or the breaking apart of something. And so when we're talking about an anabolic environment, we're talking about an environment which we're building up at a faster rate than we are tearing down. As that would apply to someone who is an athlete, you know, someone who trains with weights or cardio or what have you, a hybrid of the two, we simply want to push the body to a certain point where adaptations need to start to take place. But before we push the body that same way again or push it further, we need to completely recover from the work that we just did. And so that is what I mean in terms of an anabolic environment. We are building up faster than we tear down, or we decide to completely build back up before we decide to begin to start to completely tear down again. And there are many... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I guess this sounds like you're talking about an internal anabolic environment. Or are we also talking about external factors as well?
Yeah, they...
Like when I hear the word environment, I think of locations and, you know, things like that, not just your body.
Right. Now, both internal and external factors play a huge role. You know, when we start to talk about internally, you know, that would be, you know, tapping into the 11 fundamental homeostatic controls of the body. When our body is, when those fundamental controls are in balance, then the ability of one of them, and one of them would be the anabolic, catabolic, fundamental homeostatic control, when they're all in balance, the ability of anabolism to be turned on when it needs to be turned on is much easier than if the fundamental controls of the body are not in balance. And that would definitely have to do with one's training protocol, one's supplementation protocol, one's nutritional protocol. Those are all the internal factors. The external factors, yeah, the external factors are going to be, well, you know, who you surround yourself with, how exactly you train, what kind of environment you're actually in, like you said, a geographic area. You know, are you training with guys and gals that really push themselves day in and day out that have a great positive, you know, can-do attitude? Or are you training with people that constantly show up late, that fight, that bicker, you know, that cause an attitude that isn't a winning attitude? So that's the difference between internal and external environment.
Well, what are those? Let's focus in on the external environment a little bit first. You're talking about surrounding yourself with people with a positive attitude and just being in a good situation, a healthy environment to build muscle and get your body into this homeostasis you're talking about. Like, how does that affect the body? Who you're around? Does that have to do with your hormones or your stress levels? I mean, why does it matter who you're around? How's that going to make you more anabolic? Is that just motivation?
It actually has... Go ahead.
I was just saying, is that a motivational factor, or does that actually affect the hormones of the body, too?
It trickles down. You know, what a lot of people may or may not realize is we have... When a thought begins... This may sound a little metaphysical for everybody, but when a thought begins to materialize upstairs in the brain... We have little neuropeptides that begin to cascade down all throughout the body. Now, you know, many scientists can't really pinpoint the exact science behind it, but they can make correlations between how someone feels, how their emotions are, and how that affects the rest of the body. So these neuropeptides, the very, you know, first step in thought process trickles down all throughout all the fundamental homeostatic controls. It would be silly to think that all the controls of the body aren't interrelated. So in other words, how you affect one control of the body definitely spills over onto the other ones. Now let's take, for example, I don't know if the listeners have ever heard of this, but there have actually been studies done on men that have been in prison under, you know, strict circumstances. Their diet obviously is not optimal. The training equipment that they have is not optimal. But many cases have been documented where these men will incessantly train hard. They don't worry about recovery. They don't worry about the exact food they're getting, but they get just freaky strong, and not only do they get strong, they build lean muscle mass. And so,
and that
cannot
be a comfortable environment either. I mean, it's not like they're living stress free in that kind of situation. They're under a lot of stress.
Well, and that's where I'm going with this. It's all about how the mind perceives stress. You know, what you may perceive as stress, maybe this individual has completely change their mind into thinking, you know what, this is an opportunity. Here I am in prison. I know that I am going to, at least, you know, unless I get in trouble, I'm going to get fed a couple times a day. It may not be the greatest food, but that's part of their routine. And then unless they get in trouble, they have a routine of when they can work out. And so they look at that as just an absolute blessing. And when they train, they give it everything they've got, like there's no tomorrow. And so what you and I may consider a very stressful situation, another individual can completely turn the tables and make that just probably a huge opportunity for them to really become at one with themselves, think positive, and really focus on one thing, and that would be getting stronger and putting on lean muscle. So, you know, this very much plays into what we're talking about in terms of environment and the neuropeptides in the brain. This individual sees an opportunity, sees that the, you know, glass can definitely be full rather than empty, seizes on it, and I believe creates a very anabolic environment for themselves.
Interesting. I mean, it sounds a lot like your mindset and your attitude, where from someone externally looking in at their situation might not think it's that great of a situation, but to them, they can't wait for that opportunity to work out, and they're grateful for that opportunity, and they're making the best of it, where somebody else might have a state-of-the-art gym, and, you know, they go to the gym, and they don't feel like working out, and they just go because it's part of their schedule, and they're not taking full advantage of what they have in front of them. That's really just an outlook or an attitude. It kind of reminds me of this interview that I think we did last month with Mike Mahler, a guy really into kettlebells, and he was talking about hormones and stress levels, and it was kind of interesting. It kind of ties into what we're talking about here, where he said there could be a soldier overseas that's getting fired at that's actually under less stress levels than like a Hollywood housewife who's cooking and running around and driving and doing all kinds of things, where she is totally stressed out and producing all this cortisol, and then the soldier that from the outside looking in getting shot at is a lot more stressful, but this soldier knows how to deal with it and it's not affecting his body the same way. That's a lot has to do with your outlook and your attitude. Would you agree with that?
Yes, that's exactly where I was taking that point. So, I mean, your mind, we have the ability in terms of every situation that we encounter, we have the ability to deem that as something that's good, something that's bad, or something that just happens. Because, you know, let's say a situation comes up and you're in a car wreck. And so that's, you know, easily perceived as a bad situation, right? But perhaps in getting in the car wreck, it's not that bad. The car's totaled. Maybe you end up buying a car that's more fuel efficient with the money you get from the insurance company. And in the end, you end up saving more money than had you had the original car that you started with. So the point is that it's really up to us individually. As things come to us, we can name these things as good, bad, or just simply the next thing in front of us and take it with an open mind. And so, you know, if someone is, you know, like our example earlier in prison, and they come to the realization, look, I'm going to be here for, you know, 15 years or 30 years or whatever the case may be, and I'm just going to focus all of my energy on getting stronger and building lean muscle mass. Well, you know, it's like I said, they're going to, when they work out the hour that they have in the yard or 2 hours or however long they've got, they are going to put every ounce of energy they have into training. And they probably think about training even when they're not training, which even that contributes to an anabolic environment. Now, what is actually happening underneath all of that is that the neuropeptides, these positive thoughts that are generating in the brain, trickle down all throughout and touch all the individual fundamental homeostatic controls of the body, one of which is the anabolic-catabolic balance, one of which are the steroidal hormones of the body. So if you actually were to scientifically look at this, I'm willing to bet that the person that does this in prison, actually in terms of anabolism and catabolism, because you can test this with saliva pH, urine pH, you can see if someone is in an anabolic state or a catabolic state. And then you can actually test their hormones, and you can see, is this person in stage 3 or stage 2 adrenal fatigue, or are they in no adrenal fatigue at all, and are their hormones actually, you know, proliferating? And, you know, best case scenario is they're like off the chart. You know, their hormones are so high, it's no wonder that they have created a great environment to build strength and, you know, put on lean muscle mass.
And you're saying then your actual environment, your internal environment, if everything's optimized and in balance and anabolic, some extra calories or a deficit of calories isn't going to stop you from burning fat and building muscle if you have the right environment going on. That kind of sounds like what you're saying.
You know, there are extremes to everything, but, you know, I'm simply saying that that type of individual that can cultivate their mind to go to that level, the body will follow. Now, to what degree, you know, I don't know that anyone can say. You know, maybe they put on 10% of strength or, you know, 10 pounds of lean muscle. I don't know about that. But,
and what about your environment in the military? You had talked about that a little bit. You said that was a very anabolic environment for you. And, you know, everybody's here is getting real fascinated with the type 3 muscle fiber, which we're going to go into, which basically, for those of you that are new to the site or haven't read some of the blog posts already, what we're talking about is combining a cardio exercise with a strength training exercise into one movement. And this is creating a what we're calling a super hybrid muscle. and we didn't make up this term. Other people have talked about it, and we just got really fascinated in this lately, my buddy Elliot Hulse and I. And what we're saying basically is with a type 1 muscle fiber, which is, and you combine that with a type 2 fiber in one exercise, where one is basically an explosive. The type 2 is an explosive muscle fiber, and the type 1 is more for endurance. When you combine those two into one exercise, you can make this new hybrid type 3 fiber. Did you have any stuff like that you were doing in the military, any exercises or part of your routine that involved that kind of exercise?
Yeah, I had the privilege to be a part of some of the toughest military training that the United States has to offer. And so I've seen this firsthand, not only in guys that I came to know, but in myself. Exercises that we would do or evolutions that we would do would be something that even the athletic enthusiast would, not want to engage in. We're talking about, countless exercises with 400 plus pound telephone poles. We're talking about running on sand with Zodiac boats on top of your head. Really radical stuff, and you're at the mercy.
What'd you do with the telephone poles? What exercise was that?
Everything you can think of, from pushing the log up from your shoulder up above your head to the other shoulder, to kicking it up a berm, not down a berm, up a berm as the team in unison. You'd kick the log and all move up in unison, stop it, kick it again, and eventually
point of that? Were you guys working on building something, or was that just to condition you?
Well, the point, I think, is the same as most every special operations, in that if you work as a unit, nothing is impossible. So this environment, especially in special operations, really helps your mind. It helps it to transcend, because what you had thought was not possible before is possible now, because you're doing it. And some of
right.
the things I look back on even now, I can't even imagine trying to do some of that stuff now. But the thing is you do it. And what I saw actually happening, not only in myself, but in guys that I knew in that training, is that we were putting on lean muscle while at the same time getting leaner. Now, I can't explain to you down to the last scientific detail exactly what was happening. I don't know that anybody could. But what I can tell you is the environment that we had out there, coupled with the mindset that we had to cultivate, coupled with the actual physical activity that we did, which was usually heavy objects or implements for long durations of time, resulted in gains of lean muscle mass while we dropped body fat. And it wasn't just me. It was guys in the entire class. I mean, it was all the way down the line. And in fact, the Navy has done research on BUDS SEAL trainees in terms of how great a shape they get in when they're in training, as opposed to when they actually go to their operational teams. And the shape that is attained by a guy that's in training is just remarkable. And they really can't explain it, other than to say it's a totality or a culmination of all these things I'm telling you about. Your mindset, the actual work you've got to do, and the attitude that's cultivated there.
That's probably why, we've dug up some textbooks and we've seen mention of type 3 muscle fibers, but overall you're going to find a lot of fitness experts saying there's no such thing, or they're going to say it doesn't exist or it's impossible. All we're saying is it's hard to explain. We're not sure exactly how, but there have people that have experienced this, and you're talking about it right there. And when I first called you, I was talking about when I played football in college. It's nothing compared to being in the special operations, but I know that I was putting on weight and staying lean, or even dropping body fat at the same time. And it was kind of using the energy flux where, I was eating a lot of food and working out really hard. and I know that I was putting on muscle and losing fat at the same time, and that was definitely a totally different environment than the environment I'm in now. You know, now I don't know what this world, the fitness industry or the corporate world or what it is I'm in now, but it's not the same as college life when you're surrounded with a bunch of testosterone-filled, you know, males in their young 20s or late teens. So if something was going on with that environment, with everybody wanting to win, everybody working out real hard, all I thought about was getting better at football and lifting. And, you know, it had to have been that mindset combined with the environment, and that was just really interesting to me. So it's awesome hearing you kind of describe some of the scientific background on some of this stuff.
Yeah, that's the same. That goes along with the prison example that I gave and the special operations example that I gave. Your desire to become bigger and stronger and faster and a better football player probably trumped every other, well, other than maybe women, but when you get bigger and stronger and faster, you get the women too. So, I mean, that is just absolutely paramount for an athlete, and he obsesses over it.
Right.
You know, and again, all the
magnificent obsession.
Yeah, and it all even the obsessions, they all start as these tiny neuropeptides, these very early first steps of a thought in the brain, in the mind, and it trickles down and it touches all the fundamental homeostatic controls of the body. And then, you know, the other things follow. The training has to be there. You have to engage in some type of training that's going to put enough stimulus upon the body to where it has to adapt. And then,
Right. Well,
we have to eat enough food and sleep enough hours in order for the body to overcome the catabolism that we started with that hard training. So now we need to rest, repair, rebuild. It's probably happening at an accelerated rate when you're in college or when you're in that environment, because number one, you do have a lot of hormones flooding the body, and number two, you know that you got to get up and do it again the next day. You've got to, you know, guys that join a football team or they are there on a football scholarship, there really isn't any option. You've got to show up for practice the next day. You can't take the day off.
Right.
So, you know, the body has to go along.
Yeah, that's interesting. And, I mean, the environment sounds great, but a college student, they're actually under quite a bit of stress with all the tests going on. You don't always get all the sleep you need, whether that's your own fault or some other factor, studying or partying. And, you know, a lot of college kids are drinking, which isn't good for being in an anabolic state either. So, I mean, it's not like everything is lined up. Imagine if everything was lined up perfectly, the kind of results you could see. And it's kind of interesting, too, talking about football. I mean, that's a hybrid sport right there, talking about working the type 3 or creating the type 3 muscle fiber. You're wearing equipment, and you're running around on the field. You're grappling with people. You know, that's kind of like resistance cardio in a sport format. You're pushing sleds. I mean, it's the same kind of hybrid exercise, dragging sleds, pushing sleds. You do that on the football field as part of the practice. You're sprinting up hills as part of your conditioning. It's all hybrid exercise, which, like you said, is one factor. So it's all starting to kind of click and make sense a little bit the more we talk about it. Just shifting gears a little bit, let's move back to the internal environment a little bit. Can you talk about some of the specific hormones that can be regulated in the body and how stress might affect those?
Yeah, well, you know, one of the most important things to look at in terms of adrenal stress would be cortisol patterns. And I think it's a little bit misunderstood, perhaps through media and various other outlets. Cortisol isn't necessarily a bad thing. You know, cortisol is actually good. It's the absence of cortisol is when we begin to see adrenal fatigue. So, you know, when the adrenal glands are put under stress, and the body doesn't really delineate between stressors. If you're eating foods that don't agree with your immune system, that's a stressor. If you are training hard, that's a stressor. If you're working in a factory that sells paint and you're inhaling paint fumes all day, that's a stressor. When somebody cuts you off in traffic and you react negatively by, you know, yelling and getting, you know, mad and your blood pressure goes up, that's a stressor. They're all the same to the body. They're stressors. And so when these stressors come up, we're calling on the adrenal glands to kick out cortisol. And, well, if there comes a time when we do call on the adrenal glands, hey, I need cortisol because of, you know, this stress response, and if the adrenal glands say, well, we're either fresh out of cortisol or it's coming, but, you know, you're not going to get all of it. We only have a little bit left. That's when you begin to see adrenal fatigue setting in. And, you know, it's beyond the discussion of this interview, but, you know, once cortisol becomes impaired, the other hormones take a hit as well. We're talking about DHEA, progesterone, pregnenolone, which eventually leads to testosterone, estrogen, estriol. They're all steroidal hormones, and they're all interconnected. But being able to keep the hormones in check and lowering the amount of cortisol that you need to call upon from the adrenal glands is usually a good thing. You know, that's why it's very important to try to keep in mind that everything that you encounter in life, whether it's somebody cutting you off in traffic or whatever the case may be, you have a choice whether you want to A, deem that situation as bad and react negatively, or B, just taking it as the next thing that came in life and just, you know, going right on through it. But when you stress the adrenal glands and when cortisol production begins to run low, we start to see stage one, stage two, or stage three adrenal fatigue. And a whole host of health issues can then arise. The most important would be the immune system beginning to be compromised. And once the immune system is compromised, the gut can begin to become compromised. That can lead to leaky gut. And once that happens, your ability to use and assimilate the foods that you eat goes down dramatically. So it's one of these processes where if you get the ball rolling, you know, it can really lead to some grim prospects. And so we really want to keep our hormone profiles as, you know, as good as we can. And there are various ways to address every single stressor in our life. So, you know, it's just, I guess the take-home point is that whatever stresses you may have, to really kind of find a way to be in harmony with that and work as best you can with those situations so you're not constantly asking the adrenal glands to kick out and produce cortisol, because there's only so much they can do. They may not go out today. They may not go out 5 years from now. Nobody knows genetically how you're made, but eventually if you continue to stress your body, enough will be enough. And once you get to that point where the adrenal glands are compromised, then your ability to have DHEA available, progesterone, pregnenolone, testosterone, estrogen, all of those are impaired. And although building muscle and losing fat isn't completely and totally directly linked to all those hormones, if they're low, you're not creating an environment that's going to be anabolic. It's going to end up being catabolic.
For sure, and I mean, you're talking about all kinds of health hazards, but looking at just the muscle building and fat burning effects, it's definitely a huge factor and can just get worse from there. So, I mean, controlling stress is huge, as you've completely just told us about. You kind of answered questions before I even had a chance to ask them, so very, very thorough there. Thanks. The next thing I was wondering about is going to be sleep. Everybody knows you have to get your rest and repair your body, but how important is sleep and getting into the right REM and things when it comes to having the right anabolic environment?
Well, I don't believe that you can shift into anabolism without, you know, good solid sleep habits or sleep patterns, because, I mean, that is the body's natural way of being able to repair and rebuild when we sleep. You know, there are a lot of things that happen during sleep that even scientists can't define, other than to say that the body is rebuilding itself. So, you know, trying to gain muscle and lose fat while not eating the right foods and not sleeping well, that's the same as trying to fill a bathtub up while the drain's out, you know, or trying to walk in two separate directions at the same time. You can't do it. Now, you know, as you alluded to earlier, when we're young, you know, perhaps we have just this cascading overflow of hormones, or perhaps the energy is so positive and those neuropeptides in the brain, those early thought processes, are so powerful that they're enough to continue to keep you anabolic. You know, you may be able to continue to get by on that, even maybe throughout 4 years of college. You know, their power in terms of anabolism overriding catabolism is just so great that it really, you know, how well you sleep doesn't factor into the equation as much. But there will come a time where perhaps your attitude, your thoughts, the neuropeptides in the brain, your hormones, maybe those things aren't as favorable. And that's when these other issues in terms of sleep and how we perceive stress and the type of foods that we eat become so important. Because now what we got by with 5 or 10 years ago and what kept us in a state of anabolism, building up faster than we tear down, well, maybe now we're tearing down faster than we build up. So it's very important to take advantage of anything that will not only balance the fundamental homeostatic controls of the body, but also shift us as athletes from catabolism to anabolism. And sleep is one of those that plays a humongous part. I don't think I could speak intelligently enough about, you know, states of REM and that type thing. That's not really my expertise.
Okay, fair enough. Sounds like all these are just factors, and cumulatively together, you know, you got to get them all in line, and you don't know when each one is going to catch up with you, so you try to manage each factor on its own. Another one you just mentioned in that answer was nutrition. There's tons of articles and advertisements and all kinds of information about pre-workout nutrition and post-workout nutrition, and what you're supposed to get before you work out and replenishing your body afterwards, and how important this is to staying anabolic. And could you maybe talk about that? We know that each person is different. Not everyone's metabolic type is the same, and how you respond to different foods is different for each person. But what kind of environment are you trying to create before a workout or after a workout?
Well, it would depend upon what type of activity the individual was doing. You know, if an activity is anaerobic without oxygen, you know, we'll say, you know, powerlifting is very much like that. There are specific foods, anabolic foods, that can help shift the anabolic, catabolic, fundamental homeostatic control in the favorable direction of anabolism. Some examples of anabolic foods would be butter, cream, dairy products, poached eggs, fermented foods, fruits, juices, grains, honey, salt, surprisingly sugar, vegetables that are green and leafy, heated water, and coffee, chocolate, cocoa, tea, the xanthines.
When is the right time for those to consume those kinds of foods?
Right. It's all kind of dependent upon what it is you're going to do. If it's a training session, then anabolic foods are best used just prior to the training session and perhaps the meal or two after the training session.
Okay.
Let's say it's a competition. You've got a competition on Saturday and the 100-meter dash, track and field. Well, to prime yourself, and that would be in you know, like an anaerobic activity. To prime yourself for a competition on Saturday, you would maybe want to incorporate more of those foods the day or two before the competition, as well as right before and right after.
Okay. That's interesting. I was always wondering if your pre-workout meal and your post-workout meal, if it's okay if they're the same thing. It seems like they make these shakes that are tell you this is for before your workout and this is for your after your workout. It's like, why? You need to be, you know, getting energy before you work out and recovering afterwards. But it's interesting to hear.
Yeah.
You can eat those same anabolic foods as long as you're getting that kind of nutrition. That's what we're looking for.
Yeah, they're interchangeable. I think it's very easy, especially in the United States. You know, we're a culture of convenience. You know, we want this convenient drink that we mix up that takes us all 2 seconds to make and probably, you know, 30 seconds to a minute to drink before we lift. And then we want something else, or before our activity. And then we want something else during our activity. And then something completely different after the activity. And so I just would challenge anybody to try those protocols and then directly compare them to the protocols that we use in metabolic typing, which would be to kind of sample some of the anabolic foods for anaerobic activities or some of the catabolic foods for aerobic activities. And then just, you know, think for yourself. Don't, you know, pre-program yourself to say, oh, well, you know, so-and-so supplement company or this website said that if I drink this post-workout drink, it's the best thing there is, so it's got to be. You know, take those blinders off, be a free thinker for just a little bit, and actually do some comparisons. You know, write down the most important aspects to your sport, you know, speed, agility, power, endurance, whatever they may be, and rate them. You know, how did you feel when you drank the drinks? And, you know, do that for a couple days. And then, you know, use the foods. And do a direct comparison. Which one actually produced better results? Which one did you maybe recover from better or quicker and felt more prepared for the next workout? I worked with almost 200 individuals, and it's almost like, you know, converting people. I put it out there to people. I'm not the type of person that is going to impose something on any of my clients. I put the information out there, and I challenge them to try it. And I've yet to have one client come back to me and say that they thought the shakes did better for them than the whole foods. Now, some of the foods can be in liquid form. For example, you know, raw milk for some people can be an anabolic food. So I'm not just, you know, I'm not discouraging liquid drinks per se.
Right.
But I'm simply saying
versus a supplement that isn't even regulated, you're not even sure what exactly you're consuming. That's
exactly
a whole different
right.
topic right there.
Yep, exactly right. So, you know, think for yourself, do the comparison, and then whatever works better for you, go with that protocol.
Yeah, definitely. I completely agree with that. Supplements, if for anything, if you even know what you're taking, if it's even been tested and you see you know, an independent lab result of what's in the supplement, you know, it's just tough to even know if they're going to do anything for you. It's just for convenience, really. But if you can make the food yourself, and whole food and real food is always going to be better than any kind of supplement.
Well, I think it's kind of silly to think that some supplement company that is in Arizona or Connecticut or wherever can possibly begin to think what you need. I mean, I've worked with enough people to tell you that biochemical individuality is real. There are, you know, you can take 5 sprinters or 5 divers or 5 golfers, and I promise you, if you give them all the same thing, you're going to see different reactions across the board. Not everyone in the same sport or even the same family is going to react to, you know, X always the same. It doesn't work like that. So, you know, again, I encourage folks to think for their own and understand that everything, every food, every supplement, everything out there is relative to the individual. If a supplement company or a person comes to you and says, use this, it works for everyone, just walk the other way, because they don't know what the heck they're talking about.
Right. If somebody wanted to get individual help or some nutrition counseling from you, how can they get a hold of you, or how can they contact you to get more information?
They can visit my website, www.ericktalmant.com, ericktalmant.com. I have weekly blog posts. We put up weekly videos. It's information. I'm putting the information out there, and hopefully folks will read it. And, you know, if they want to work with me, that's great. If they want to work with another metabolic typing advisor that's in their local area, I can help them with that as well. For me, it's just about getting the information out there, because so many of us do pay so much attention to the supplement ads or the latest fad or whatever the next thing on the horizon may be. And the truth is that, you know, those oftentimes aren't the best fixes. The best fixes are things that are much simpler, that are kind of right under our noses.
Yeah, for sure. Eric, we really appreciate you having on the call. I think I'm going to have to go and replay this and take some notes myself and try to implement some of these to develop an optimal anabolic environment for myself. Just as a quick summary, for those of you that may have joined in late, we've been talking about how to build an anabolic environment so that you could be in the right state to build muscle and burn fat at the same time, even though a lot of experts say this is impossible. We've got a lot of case studies here, people that have actually experienced that for themselves. And just as a quick review, Eric, what are some of the, just kind of list the factors again that people need to be aware of or try to control?
Well, especially, you know, we definitely want to, everything starts with the mind. You know, positive, not necessarily positive, but just, you know, create an environment in your mind where you don't necessarily label things as always good or bad. It's just the next thing that's being put in front of you. It's an opportunity, okay?
Good.
And once you see that, then maybe you realize that training is an opportunity, and then you just bust your butt for an hour or 2 hours or however long you're in the gym. So you have to believe. You have to have the right mindset. Number two, foods. You've got to eat the right foods and stop eating the wrong ones. It's so simple, but it makes as big an impact as anything. If you're eating foods that push your body chemistry in the wrong direction, and if you're eating foods that are interfering with your immune system, then your ability to cultivate an anabolic environment is going to be impaired. Your adrenals are going to be impaired, and it's just going to make it that much more difficult for you to gain muscle mass and lose fat. Third is definitely keep stressors down, you know, and that kind of ties in with the first thing we talked about. If there's something in your life that is bothering you, whether it's a friend or your car that constantly needs to be fixed, or whatever the case may be, you need to find a way to kind of be at peace with that situation. And any other blocking factors that are in your environment. You know, if you, as I alluded to earlier, work in a factory that, you know, sells paint and you're constantly inhaling paint fumes, or if you're, cooking with pots that are made with no-stick tefal, you know, all these things, they may not seem like a whole lot individually, but when you add up all these different stressors on the body, at the end of the day, it's a big load on the adrenal glands. And so, you know, it's one more thing that's going to put you in a catabolism, tearing down, and not anabolism, which is building up. So, you know, eating the right foods, proper mindset, checking out blocking factors, and then, doing the hard work, the actual work. You can't have all of these ducks in a row and expect not to have to work hard. I mean, that's a huge component to the program. You've got to find something that's going to stimulate your body enough to where it has to adapt and grow.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, Eric. I mean, this is real motivational for me just to listen to you talking about this, because the last thing I wanted to do was put on 20 pounds of muscle mass and in the process put on fat too, and then decide it's time to, okay, now I'm going to cut down and I'm going to burn all this fat off. And then what happens is you lose the fat and you lose half the muscle you just put on, and it's up and down, and you're never living your life the way you want to be. I don't want to be big, strong, and fat, and I don't want to be skinny and lean and weak either. I want to be right in the middle, and it's kind of greedy, and everyone tells me I can't do it, and then I call you on the phone, and you say it is possible, and this is something me and Elliot Hulse are experimenting with down at a strength camp right now with the hybrid exercises that we've been doing, and it's been working great so far. And with your nutrition help, you know, I'm down 10 pounds already since I started doing this, and I'm still getting stronger. So this is great stuff for me to hear, and I just wanted to share this information with everybody out there that does have an open mind. That's one of the first things I said to everybody when they come to the blog. If you already have a closed mind and say this isn't possible because of what somebody told you at the gym or something you read in a book, then, you know, this isn't for everybody. But if you got an open mind about it and you do think it's possible, then we'd love to share this journey with you. So thanks again, Eric. And everybody check out Eric's site, erictalmont.com. And also stay tuned to the blog, leanhybridmuscle.com, for some new blog posts we have coming up. And we also have a surprise interview next month. It's going to be with a very well-known author. So stay tuned for that. You're really going to enjoy it. So thanks again, Eric. We'll talk to you real soon.
All right, Mike.